You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
In his second collection of short stories called Memory Wall, Anthony Dorr contemplates the power of memory, how it defines us as individuals and connects us to the collective consciousness. One of the stories has won the National Magazine Award for Fiction, another the Pushcart Prize, and the book is published by Scribner. I'm very pleased that it brings Anthony Dorr to our show today. Hello.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
The title story of this collection was commissioned by McSweeney's. Now, I know nonfiction pieces are often commissioned. Does it happen much with fiction?
That's a great question. Occasionally it happens, but much more rarely. Yeah, McSweeney's asked a group, about a dozen writers, a group of us, to try to imagine life in 2024 in different locations around the world.
And since you were already thinking of stories that involved memory, you decided to do that and of course, make it a memory story.
Exactly. I was working on a collection of stories linked kind of neurologically rather than linked by character or place. And I had taken a trip to South Africa years before and started thinking, how can I try to write a story that has to do with dementia and maybe fossils in South Africa?
Well, the South Africa you describe is kind of like the South Africa of the past, whites-only signs and some drinking fountains, for example. Because the legacy of apartheid remains a reality? You can't erase it from memory?
That's right, exactly. I was very interested in how the memory of apartheid still resonates. And all these stories, and I was interested in how memories of past events, World War II, for example, resonates in contemporary or even, in this case, futuristic situation. And really how it's hard to understand everything around you, architecture, what people eat, what cities look like without memory, without understanding the past.
Well, one thing is sure, you think that we'll have Alzheimer's in the future because your main character, Alma, is suffering from Alzheimer's.
Yes, yes. And I read an essay by a neurologist who argued that not only are we learning to locate specific memories in the brain, but soon enough we may be able to actually stain them and try to understand what they look like, what the shape between neurons might look like. And so I just extrapolated that a bit farther and tried to imagine maybe we can extract memories and preserve them on little cartridges and maybe even someday trade them and let other people peer in and eavesdrop on memories.
So you invented this memory device.
Yep.
Is Alma comforted by her memories?
That's a good question. She builds – the title of the book and the story is Memory Wall because she builds this wall in an upstairs bedroom on which she posts these cartridges, this kind of panoramic map of her memory, and she arranges them in an order that is quickly lost to her. The argument and some research is proving this now. Even people suffering from Alzheimer's will occasionally videotape events and watch the events back to try to strengthen their memories of them. And so the argument that I put in the story is that maybe doctors are having people watch these cartridges back to try to strengthen their memories. So
now memory has been a feature of literature pretty much from the start. Books were written as false memoirs, for example, people remembering what happened in the past. And, of course, Proust made it the centerpiece of his mammoth novel. Was memory what you were thinking about when you started writing these stories, or did you discover it as a theme as you were working?
The first story I wrote in this book is not the first story that appears in the book. It's called Village 113, and it's about the Three Gorges Dam and the erasure of a particular village as it was inundated by the rising waters of the Yangtze behind the Three Gorges Dam. And after finishing that story, I realized this is what I'm interested in. This is what I want to write.
That's about bringing a lost place back to life through memory.
The story is, yes. Because, literally thousands of years of history have been drowned behind that dam. And I try not to take a political stand in that story. I just try to ask questions about it because I certainly understand that, you know, it brings an end to flooding in the lower reaches. It brings power to millions of people. So I try not to say, you know, the Three Gorges Dam is evil. I just tried to show one individual's experience as her village disappears.
But I'm still trying to get back to this other point because I've spoken to so many writers about what gets them thinking about a story or a novel. And often they'll say, well, there was a smell or I saw something on the street and that got me thinking about this other thing. And in your case, did you automatically, no matter what happened, think, well, I have to find a way to fit this into my memory series?
That's a good question. I did write some other stories while writing these stories, and often it's only later upon reflection, after your subconscious kind of operates on what you're working on, do you understand, you know, this too is fundamentally about memory. If there's an instance, the instance is returning home to visit my parents and remembering a lot of times when my grandmother came to live with us. My grandmother came to live with us when I was 16, and she was suffering from Alzheimer's, really in the very early days of when people even talked about Alzheimer's. It was the first time I had heard the word Alzheimer's. And, I was a 16-year-old. I wasn't necessarily more self-absorbed than any other 16-year-old, but, you know, I was interested in my own life. And I was blind in a lot of ways to the absolute pain my mother was going through watching her mother forget. Mm-hmm. Not only who my mother was, but, you know, her entire life, watching herself slowly disintegrate. And so in a lot of ways, if there is one instance for writing this book, it was trying to understand, you know, my own ignorance about what my mother and my father went through with my grandmother.
You mentioned that you'd been to South Africa before you wrote that story for McSweeney's. The various stories in this collection are set all over the world, Wyoming, Hamburg during World War II, China, Lithuania. Well, I'm sure you weren't in Hamburg during World War II, but have you spent time in all those places?
I have, except for China. I'd spent some time in Hong Kong, and I kind of used a bunch of details from my journal on Hong Kong to try to build, especially when she visits a city downstream from her village in the story Village 113.
Yeah, and you do write about these places in a lot of detail. Because you've written notes while you visited them?
That's exactly right. I keep a journal everywhere I go, and I think keeping a journal helps you pay attention to a place. And I don't, you know, it's not something I'm going to publish. It's not something I'm going to show people, which takes pressure off it. And often I'm just linking sentences about what I'm seeing. You know, I love when you travel to try to become one big eye, just looking out at the world. And not only does travel help you see where you are, I suppose it's a cliche, but it also helps you understand where you've come from. And there's nothing better than for cracking that habitual crust that forms around your life, that crust of familiarity, than leaving home and going someplace, especially someplace where people aren't speaking a language you know, where you feel a little bit uncomfortable. That's when I feel really alive.
There's also a wide variety of protagonists in this book, a couple going through fertility treatments, an orphan teenager, an old Chinese seed seller, based on people you've seen or known?
In most cases, no. Except for maybe the couple going through infertility. A lot of the characters in the book are usually composites of memory, imagination, and research.
And a lot of them are women. So it's obviously fun to get into the mind of a Chinese seed seller, but do you see that as the same thing as getting into the mind of a woman? Or do you think that women think pretty much the way that men do?
I could get in trouble with that question. What I tell my students is that I think write what you know, this classic cliched advice that writers are given, is very limiting. I think ultimately we are writing about what we know, in that we're writing about heartbreak or getting lost or falling in love or being confused. But fundamentally, I think you should be able to take risks as a fiction writer. That's why I became a fiction writer, is to try to enter other skins, and not only enter other genders, but enter other places. You know, times I haven't been alive, enter the future, or, you know, write about a Finnish washerwoman in 1860. I think fundamentally, if you feel like the human experience has some commonalities, why not try it? Why not try to invent people from other times and other places?
You not only invent the people, you invent their memories of people who have passed away.
Yeah. There's something incredible about books in which a voice can live long after the writer is dead. You know, for me, the perfect example of that is Anne Frank. You know, I read that book when I was 14. She was 14 when she wrote, you know, the last entries in her diary. And, you know, for me, as a 14-year-old, I realized, like, this girl lives in these sentences, you know, and this book brings her back to life. And there's something, it's absolutely magical and transcendent that books can do that.
I'm talking with Anthony Doerr, whose latest book is a collection of stories called Memory Wall. It is published by Scribner. The last story in the collection, Afterworld, is really powerful. Where did the idea come from?
I've been writing a novel set during World War II for a long time, about 4 years on and off, been working on it. And during research for that book, I ran across a stack of deportation manifests from Germany, obviously almost entirely Jewish people taken out of Germany on trains to camps, all of these meticulous records of an extermination of people. And on one of those deportation manifests, there were 12 names And their birth dates are listed as well. And the oldest person on there was 16, and it was all girls. And, you know, it took me forever to try to even just absorb that piece of paper. I tacked a copy of it up on a bulletin board near my desk, and it took me several years before I was even ready to try writing a story about that.
Well, in that story, you have a sentence that seems to be a statement of your goal as a writer. Within the wet enclosure of a single mind, a person can fly from one decade to the next, one country to another, past to present, memory to imagination. Is that the unifying theme of these stories, you think?
I think it is. I think for me that's kind of a metafictional line too. I think that's about, hey, you know, maybe a wink from the writer to the reader saying, hey, you know, within a single mind, you too can do this. That's what a library is in a sense, is, you know, a flight from history to imagination and time and place. And you know, that this can be done with little black marks on a white page. It's a miracle to me still.
Now, you live in Idaho, but you write a column on science for the Boston Globe.
Yeah, that came about maybe 6 years ago. They asked me to start writing about science books for them. And, you know, I guess that's a wonder.
Have you always been interested in science? Because science runs through this, but this is not a book about science.
Correct. I have been very interested
in neuroscience.
Yes. There is a lot of neuroscience in the book, but only in a very, sometimes even in a mystical way, only in a kind of dreamy way. I am very interested in science. I think science and art are not these distinct buildings on the campus of a university. I think they have a lot of different overlaps. They're both ways of trying to understand the human experience and trying to understand meaning. And my mother was a science teacher in high school, and my brother is an optics scientist. I was kind of surrounded by science growing up. So.
And there's a lot of attention paid to the outdoors and the landscapes and natural forms in your writing. Having nothing to do with science, but I guess having a lot to do with living in Idaho.
Yeah, and actually quite a bit to do with science. You know, I think this, I became a fiction writer because I wasn't careful enough to become a naturalist, I think, you know. But fiction writing is a way for me to try to help guide my eyes, not only to human experiences, but to our interactions with the natural world.
Although every so often we read in the newspaper about a scientist who has created a fiction, and that's always interesting. Why did they think they can get away with it? You can get away with it because you get paid for doing this sort of thing. How did you wind up being the state of Idaho's writer in residence? And what does a position like that involve?
It's actually a lovely position. It's a governor appointed position, and you get to be it for 3 years. And it involves traveling around the state, giving readings throughout the year. And for me, my favorite part is meeting students, especially visiting high schools. And showing them, you know, Idaho's a very rural state, occasionally a very conservative state. And to show, you know, 16-year-olds that, you know, hey, I live here and I'm writing books that are being read elsewhere. I hope just being there shows them that this is a possibility for them. You don't have to live in Paris or New York to be a writer.
Now, you talked about working on a novel. These stories often have a lot of stuff packed into them. What's the difference between packing a lot of stuff into a short story and being a bit more expansive and dealing with pretty much the same material in the larger form?
Yeah, expansive is a great adjective for it. There is a spaciousness in a novel, but there's also a larger narrative arc. I feel like writing a novel is kind of like trying to carry a bunch of pancake batter across a warehouse in your hands. You know, it's very hard to keep track of. And writing a short story, especially one, say, shorter than 10,000 words, is one of the great joys of it for me, is that I feel like I can contain it within the space of my mind. I can read through the entire thing as I work on it during a single day. And so also, because a short story is maybe only takes you 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 months of your life to write, I'm much more willing to take risks in the short form. I feel like I would be a lot more reluctant to write a novel in which, you know, memories can be extracted from somebody's brain, because you commit 3 or 4 years to an idea that you're a little scared about trying to execute. But in a short story, you think, okay, if this is fundamentally, intrinsically flawed, I've only really given up 3 or 4 months of work.
Anthony Durr is the author of 4 books, The Shell Collector, About Grace, 4 Seasons in Rome, and now a collection called Memory Wall, Stories. It's published by Scribner. I want to thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.